tell us about the piece, A Monumental Offering of Potential Energy, its original version, which then was at Human Resources here in LA as a subsequent offering. Tell us about that restaging, the evolution of the piece.
So the original work was something that I developed for almost an entire year when I was a resident at the Studio Museum, which was the first time I'd ever had that much time and space to focus solely on one show. And that was really cool because I was able to think of nothing but that, really. Took about 8 months to plan and build, and then about 3 to perform the work. So the performance was so grueling and intense that I decided that when the work gets shown, I don't want to ever do that again. I don't think that it just wouldn't make sense.
And for people who don't know, what is the grueling aspect of it? What's the performative aspect?
So there's this like about 40 foot long roller coaster, the sculpture, the scaled down roller coaster that's like maybe 8 or 9 feet at its tallest point, and then about 40 feet long and about like 6 to 8 feet wide. And then in one portion of the sculpture, there's a wooden platform that I would lie on during all hours that the museum was open. So that was a Thursday to Sundays, noon to about 8 p.m., some days like 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. So they were like really long days of lying on a plywood platform, no bathroom breaks, no breaks to like drink water or like have a snack. It was like 8 to 9 hours straight through for like 16 weeks. After that, I don't want to perform that. So then thinking about when this work gets shown again, I like thinking about the structure and the sculpture as kind of like a performance relic, you know, like a remnant of an action. But in this case, the remnant is like a pretty big sculpture. So that's the documentation of this action, is this like this kind of like elaborate bed or stage for a thing that happened, and so I think that there's like a type of spirit or energy imbued into the thing. But I wanted to go a step further and not just have it be about the sculpture or the action, but like another site for something else to happen. I raised the platform and extended a smaller platform just in front of it. So the sculpture itself sits raised about a foot, and then there's a smaller stage in front that's just like basically an open stage. And that was the subsequent offering. Like, it's no longer mine, but I also didn't want it to just like sit in a space of being like just viewed. Like, mm-hmm. I think it needs.
It was activated by various performances in the, 3 weeks that it was up.
Mm-hmm. It needs action. It needs, like, it needs movement. I mean, it's, you know.
It needs human power.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Other people to hold.
Right.
What was the process like for inviting people to perform with it?
I sort of left that up to the people at Human Resources. I just kind of mentioned that, you know, this the sort of ethos of the work was creating a space for those who exist in bodies that are oftentimes like maybe neglected, ignored, pushed aside, relegated to the margins. Like, this is a work that offers, you know, a space of illumination and elevation and just kind of like a more triumphant sort of showcasing of these bodies. And so with that, I was like, okay, you guys, since like Human Resources is like, you program events and lectures and screenings, and this is sort of like what you do, how about I just like create the environment and you do what you do best, knowing that the spirit of the piece is like very kind of like specific. And so they took that into account and curated a series of programming and performances that, like Fuck You Pay Us, Fupu, I think was one of the opening, one of the opening performances. I think they were the first ones to perform on the stage. And that's like, you know, like a all femme, like queer, black, like punk band, you know? It was fucking incredible. It was amazing.
I went to another night of performance that I saw, I think her name is Maria Mayo?
Yeah.
That was really, it was, I mean, I had wondered kind of how people would engage, you know, with that sculpture, because it's so charged and you had done, you know, a very, like, specific performance with it. And, like, yeah, even there's still, like, your body imprint is like you can see it in the platform. So yeah, I was really curious like how people would engage with it. And her performance was really, it was very visceral. She had this kind of breathing thing that she was doing, like a kind of call and response with the audience. There was this very intense conversation that happened like through breath and kind of like this kind of, it was like gasping and like deep breathing, maybe some kind of like and then like laughter, and there was this way that like it became very that kind of feeling really spread through the audience, and then everybody was sort of doing it, which I guess now I'm thinking about like, oh, like the experience of being on the roller coaster and those kind of like sharing that sort of breath and the ups and downs.
Can I ask, is this also the performance where the woman had some kind of object at the end of a rope and
swinging
was
it around.
Yeah. Swinging it around, and it was very visibly
dangerous.
It was dangerous. Yeah. Like the people in the front were like, "Whoa!" Yeah. And stepping back, we were there for that same performance. It was interesting how it spread throughout the audience. I couldn't figure out if it was that these were friends of the artist or plants or it, but it did seem really organic and real.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because when in developing the work at the Studio Museum, there were several people who, when I told them, I kept the performance aspect quiet for a really long time because I was still working through whether this was something I actually wanted to or even could successfully complete. But when I finally started talking about it, people were like, "Wait, you can't do like you can't do that," and like a lot of the times when I talk about new ideas for performances specifically, just the ideas themselves, to everyone else it seems like, wait, like that's dangerous or like that you can't. What do you mean? So even before making the work, I always find myself fighting for it in a way to sort of like make it happen. Like it always feels like before I even make the thing, I have to justify, defend, which is kind of a crazy way to make. And I only bring that up because I remember we were just talking about this a little bit ago. But when we were in school, Dylan, you had to like fight a lot to sort of like show the work you wanted to show and like get people on board. It almost felt like you were, I don't know, like beyond the rest of us. You know, we were just like mere like.
That's not what it felt like. But, I mean, it makes me think about when you're talking about your project that it's, I mean, the work kind of comes from that place of already living an experience, right, where it's being contested. And then as you try to make work that, you know, as much whether or not we acknowledge how it's related to that experience, it's like then the work is contested. And you're like, oh, this is just how it is. This is the experience. And
so how do you move past that though? Like when you're, you know, you're following your own kind of threads and falling down your own rabbit holes and something that kind of speaks to you very like loudly and clearly and you're responding to that, when you present that or when you're just like trying to communicate the ideas that you already, or that you're forming, people are just kind of like, like, what's your sort of like methods for trusting your processes and moving through it?
Going back to what we were talking before, that there's there's this like power structure of how we are supposed to be, like, where information comes from and how we're supposed to be receiving it, which is often a power structure that's outside of, you know, what, like, people of color and women and queers are allowed to, like, participate in creating. And so, I mean, there's this constant reminder, or, like, trying to, like, remember and then re-remember that, you know, the things that I care about are the things that I'm paying attention to, that we're paying attention to, like, they come from somewhere and they do resound. And I think sometimes I'll feel like, oh, I made this thing that's really personal, and it makes me, you know, I'll get, like, nervous or ashamed, and I think, you know, many of us, like, have that experience. And one thing I thought about recently was just being like, oh, we have this idea that the personal makes us, like, singular, that, like, that experience makes us, like, alone, that we're the only one that's had it. And just even thinking about in making a work, like, that, like, you were there with that cactus with me. You know, it's like we're not doing really any of this stuff completely alone, that we're already, that, like, you know, it's like Fred Moten always says, like, love incompletes you, right? Like, we're not just one by ourselves with these experiences. Like, we're already entangled, and so much of, especially because, like, my projects will often kind of try to weave together a lot of different experiences or kind of things that I'm coming across over a long span of time, that those are their experiences I'm having with other people. And so I think kind of trying to ground myself in that, being like, we were all a part of this, just really expands it to, like, the infinite. And I mean, I think that's what people kind of, like in the history of identity art, people kind of try to talk about that too, that, like, identity is this kind of limit. And I heard Charles Gaines actually say this thing about his show from 93, the Theater of Refusal, and which kind of was a show with these different works of art, and showed next to all of this art criticism that was kind of like talking about how the work was all identity art. And so he kind of wanted to like juxtapose those things, like, right next to each other. And he really talked about that, you know, why do we have to see that as, like, a limit? Like, who says that experience, that identity is a limit? Like, why, like, how do we engage? How do we engage with work in a way that opens it up and makes it infinite? Which I thought was, I was like, oh, uh-huh. Yeah.
Mr. James. Yeah. Well, that also reminds me of the workshop, the writing workshop that you offered, like, what, 2 months ago or something at Lace, which was kind of billed as like a, like, yeah, we're gonna come together and, like, maybe write some stuff, but also, like, kind of perform and, like, workshop other things. Like, we're writing through action, so, like, I don't know, just, like, come through. And I was like, yeah, all right. Like, then, like, in that, like, sort of invitation was kind of just like, yeah, like, this is so Dylan, you know? And I get there not knowing really what to expect, but, like, the prompts for our writing exercises weren't just like, okay, like, now think of this, and then, like, think of this, and then write for a few minutes. But, like, as we're writing, we're, like, also, like, guiding people with their eyes closed around the room. We're, like, performing with, like, yellow and blue, like, plexi panels, and being instructed to hold, like, a foil hooded parka thing over a fan. And it became this, like, I remember when I pulled out enough times to look around the room while people are either writing or just, like, following these, like basically, like, performance scores, I'm like, holy shit, this is like a performance, a show, this is an exhibition for, like, an audience of, like, the participants, you know? Like, it wasn't like, come to this thing and be a distant viewer that's, like, watching this thing. It's like, come to this show, but like make it with me, like make the work with me. And I thought that was like just super beautiful. And I guess I want to ask, like, how, like, does that feel like the beginning of what you were just talking about, like, just sort of, like, opening this up, or do you find yourself, like, maybe, like, a crux and starting to follow this line of having people not just, like, around as, like, viewer supporters, but, like, also around in the making?
I think it kind of acknowledges what is already, you know, like I was saying, that it's already, like, we're co-creating, you know, so much of these works, and so art kind of often functions in this way where there's, like, one author, even though there's a lot of different kind of moving parts that have gone into it and different people. So to just sort of, like, acknowledge that. And then also, I mean, I'm just, like, a very awkward, nervous person, and somehow, like, continue to sort of accidentally find myself, like, in a performance situation, and I'm like, oh, yeah, no. So, like, with that one, when I was asked to perform at LACE, I was kind of like, okay, maybe there's some, like, information in my resistance. Like, I'm nervous. Like, what do I do? I don't want people to look at me. So I was like, okay, usually I'm just like, pull it together, Mira, let's go. Which, you know, I think that's an idea that's handed to us, right? Where it's like, it doesn't matter if you're comfortable or not. Like, who cares? You're going to do this. And so within that, I was able to be like, okay, there's a lot of different practices that I do within my work, even to just, like, acclimate myself to the point of where I'm, like, okay, letting things, figuring out how to, like, let stuff out. Yeah, and just being like, let's do that together. Like, I don't want to feel away from the audience. I don't want to feel like a lot of people are watching me and that, like, I have, in that, I mean, I'm not saying that it's, like, I'll never be in that sort of setup again, but I was kind of like, I don't really want to do that thing where now I, like, hide for many months to, like, try to put something together and then be like, hey, you guys, like, I'm back, like, come see me, I'm going to tell you a thing. But, like, how can we use art as a way to actually hang out and be together, and that there's a lot of experiences that I have, like, when I'm working on stuff that I'm also interested in being, like, instead of, like, trying to find a way to communicate the experience, like, what, like, can you just have the experience?
So the last sort of prompt was, like, as we were writing, Dylan comes around and, like, plops a grapefruit and, like, a small blade next to each of us in our, like, writing, and then, like, doesn't say a word. We're just kind of like, and then through, like, at some point just mentioned that, like, think of a word and then carve it into the skin of the grapefruit. And so the room's, like, filling with, like, the scent of, like, grapefruit, and then we're instructed to, like, have the grapefruit, like, so if this is the carving, just, like, facing outward, and then lay on the floor, like, rest our foreheads on the grapefruit. So I do this, and I just, like, feel the juices start to, like, ooze out of this word that I carved into the, and, like, I look, the whole room is, like, lying on top of, like, a grapefruit, and I was just like, she's a fucking genius. Like, this is, like, this is what you're, like, and that word, I still remember it, you know, very vividly. Tandem, and it, like, it comes up a lot, like, in just, in, like, my thinking, and, like, in the studio when I'm just, like, oh, yeah, like, things, like, working in parallel, and, like, tandem, and it's, like, a word that, like, I still hang on to, like, in part of it.
In my mind of two people passing a cactus back and forth. I think maybe in my mind it was kind of my mom and me. And at some point I asked if you would come over and do something with a cactus with me. And you were like, cool. And I had a lot of different props that I thought that we could use to do this. And actually, like, when you're planting a cactus, there are all these special tools that people use because it is hard to hold a cactus and pick it up and move it around. And so we did a few, we videotaped trying it in a couple different ways, and there was like some, we tried some sponges and different things.
Yeah, I remember the yellow sponges probably most vividly because it, like, it was a very strange sensation. Like if nails on a chalkboard had like a counter, it would be sponge on a cactus. You know, like it was like a different kind of like I felt it all in my body. It was weird.
You, and then at some point you were just like rubbing the sponges together, and you were like, "This is a thing," and it was. And they had like this real, they had this like resistance to each other. And they made this sound, and then at some point you were like, "Well, I mean, can we just pick it up with our hands?" And I was like, "I think you can kind of hear me just whispering like so quietly in the video, like this is so you."
Yeah, it is. Yeah, because I was just like, "Well, so what does this feel like? You know, mm-hmm. like it might hurt, but like how?"
I was scared, but it didn't really hurt.
No. You just had to be, like, really careful.
Yeah.
How does that, like, that experimentation and, like, tactility, or I guess you would say, like, how does that play in the video?
I mean, I'm interested in texture as, like, a way of communicating and, sharing information, and in general, I guess like across my practice, and this is something that I think became really strong in that video, this kind of practice of decolonizing knowledge, and how thinking about like, thinking and feeling actually about how we're communicating and how we share information. So that I didn't really know where that was going to go, or even if that is what that was about. But I think over time I've been like, oh, like this is this conversation that we're having that is through feelings.
Mm-hmm. And so when EJ, you're like, well, let's just pick this thing up, and you were like, that's what's that? Like, what was so you about just?
I think maybe. This sort of impulse to approach a line that, you know, there are all of these precautions around a thing or an action, or maybe we can call them like boundaries or something to contain a thing. And in this instance, the thing was handling a cactus. So there's like sponges, there's like gloves, there's all of these things that have, as Dylan mentioned, sort of been adopted, I guess, in like cactus planting.
Yeah,
you know, it's like that's the thing. So I'm just kind of like, all right, cool. Like these parameters are in place for this to like function efficiently. So like, what happens if we like stretch this a little bit and like maybe like kind of obliterate the boundaries, or maybe just test them a little bit, and like how else can we perform this function without being totally contained by sort of boundaries or parameters that have been placed, developed, adopted. Also, I don't know, maybe I'm like kind of a masochist. Like, to be like totally real about it, like, I don't know, I was just like, oh my God, what's this gonna feel like? I wanted to feel it.
Well, you gotta be prepared to hurt yourself too when you're deconstructing master narratives, right?
I think so.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, right? Like, there's so many kind of, like, layers between, I think, us and our intuition and our feelings and these layers of protection and then the prescribed tools. And, yeah, you really showed up and were like, okay, like, what is it like when we really get into it? It's interesting. I filmed, actually, some other people doing it, too, and there was a... I did film my friend and her mother passing the cactus, And it was so intense. Like, they started swinging it around and, like, throwing it upside down. And they had this kind of, like, loofah back scratching scrub. And it was just, like, it got... I had this real connection with the cactus where I was like, okay, it's time to put it back in the ground. Okay. But, I mean, I'm interested in that, yeah, the relationship between, I don't know, like, what, like, can the object feel? Mm-hmm. And, like, what is our communication? Like, all communication is hard. Mm-hmm. And how are the ways that we're communicating? And then even, like, across, like, you know, like, between people and across language and across subjectivity and across species. So.
Damn. Yeah, and in this space, maybe the cactus was just, like, a thing for people to sort of, like, work through their shit with, you know? Like, it just became, like, the vessel for, like, what we maybe were going to do anyway,
mm-hmm. you know?
What we do.
Mm-hmm.
Already.
Yeah.
Huh.
And I mean, that was like one of the early things that I did with that piece, I think. And I wonder actually how you feel about this, like, if you can talk about how you maybe get into making something. Because I think in my process, you know, I had been doing like we did this performance, and I'd had a couple other performances of people rubbing aluminum foil onto each other's faces. So there's also this thing of like texture and like the lateral kind of information of feeling and sharing, and like how do you like recognize through that. And then I had what I thought was like very different research happening at the same time about the Little Mermaid statue in Copenhagen, which I kind of like fell into because I learned that it was one of the most vandalized pieces of public art in the world. Like, she's been decapitated a few times and been exploded and, like, stolen. Like, the actual statue that's on display is not the original one. And then as I started studying this sculpture and, like, getting into, like, the, like, what is this mermaid story and what's the history? And because that sculpture is based on the Little Mermaid fairy tale. And then getting back into the mythology of that, when I followed it for a while, I found that one of the earliest mermaid sightings in history is also the first written record of a European in Korea. So then it got to this place of like, okay, like how do we become human, and like who decides, you know? And that this was based on like a shipwrecked Dutch sailor seeing female divers in the south of Korea, which has been like a centuries old practice. So somehow all of these things after a while came together. I was like, okay, maybe this all like tells a story, and tells a story that is something that's out there, but also that like I came through from experiencing and kind of following these different threads and weaving these different threads together, that I felt like ultimately had a relationship around history and like how do we come to know what we know, and who decides what those methods are, and like who gets to write history, and like how is that communicated. But I think it was like a newer developing process for me that I'm like much more aware of now. But so yeah, I guess I'm curious for you, like how do you go about making a thing?
Begin.
Yeah.
Well, I think actually that might be part of why I think we sort of connect on that level, because it's like very kind of gut based, I would say. You like follow a thread that just like you pick at it for a while. You're like, what's this? And then you follow it down, and then you know your entire thing's unraveled. But like you find something in the unraveling. Before I talk about like starting, like how I start a thing, when you were mentioning that just now, and like connecting the lines and maybe learning through like developing a narrative or investigating a narrative, it reminds me of something you made a while ago, where like you had just bought a car like shortly after moving to LA, and like you bought a car from like some like Craigslist dude or something.
An artist.
Right, okay, so you bought a car from an artist. But, like, you made this work that was, like, sort of like trying to uncover who this like mystery person was, or this person that you bought this thing from, because like cars in Los Angeles become like, it's like a glove for us, you know? And it's like a, it becomes an exact fit for the owner, the driver. And so there were like books left in the trunk, and like maybe like empty like Pepsi bottles in the backseat, like all these things that like hinted at a person. And I remember you making this work, like presenting your like findings, almost like this like archival sort of like digging of a contemporary like male and like artist male in like Los Angeles, and presenting the contents of this car that you had just bought. And it was immediately like, oh shit, she's just like really, really trying to figure out like her and our position in like this whole, our position in this whole thing that we're doing, you know? And I thought that was like really cool to just be like, I don't know, just like figuring this thing out. So I think in line with that, when I'm just kind of like walking through the world existing, and there are like forces enacting themselves upon my body and like me reacting to those things as a person in the world, you know, within a myriad of identifications, I'm just kind of like also trying to figure out where I fit and how I fit alongside other people. And a lot of that, because I feel things so intensely, much of the work comes or manifests in a way of like sort of like making the internal feelings external, so that I can like ground them in like a reality. And sometimes those things come out looking like they hurt a little bit.
And then I guess it makes me think about like your current piece that you have up at Human Resources, and kind of the history of that. Thinking about like that, there is within the structure of the roller coaster that there's like both this idea and like desire and celebration of elevation, and then also within the roller coaster there's this there's danger and there's fear, and there's like a certain kind of, within also being elevated is a certain kind of like scrutiny. So I guess, yeah, it makes me wonder about what does it feel like to share a feeling. Like when you externalize a feeling, like you're talking about, and sometimes that feeling looks like it hurts, and that there is pain in that feeling. Like, what else is it like when you're able to share that experience?
It's a huge release, you know. It's like a catharsis, because otherwise it's just sitting in me forever. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing about that too is that like it it's sort of like placed onto and within me, so I don't form it by myself, but yet I'm more prone to like holding it all mm-hmm. by myself, you know. So if I'm thinking of like these like sort of social transactions where like a person is in the world and like we're all sort of like creating an air or an environment where we're pressing up against each other, psychologically, emotionally. It's a bummer that like we like usually we can't like it's sort of like frowned upon to sort of like put that back out into the world as you're processing it. Like you're supposed to hold on to it yourself and deal with it because like, you know, everyone has their own shit to deal with or whatever is the idea, I guess. But like if I'm not forming this by myself, then like why can't I process it with the same like forces or people that kind of administer it, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like a release. It's a
show, and rate the show, and please do that. www.freshfromthepress.net and click on the page, and that's where you can get this and everything. Now back to our conversation with Jake.
I like how there's so many connections within it. Like, it's like this epic vest of Pisces with all these kind of like different like materials and veins, and how like everything like overlaps and like circles around and becomes, I don't know, yeah, there's both like a multiplicity and unity. The GERD says, the card represents inner and outer richness, great success, unification of the body and soul, material and spirit, heaven and earth, wholeness. Well, that's cool. I mean, I guess it's thinking about, like, because we were kind of like, okay, we're in the last segment, like, what do we get into here? And we had already talked about some notions around presence and absence and the body and the work and where that is. And this is kind of interesting, like the unification of these things. I don't know, and this idea of wholeness, which like...
But you kind of touched on like earlier, actually, you know. I mean, but also like as actually for as long as I've known you, this has been something that you turn to, which is a pretty like normal for me, yeah, actually. So it's like, and it's actually, it's pretty sweet to have this thing that like, that comes back to me, like presents itself in my life via you, which is kind of cool. So I wonder, like, when did this, like, how does this factor into like your daily living, your art practice, just like how you manage being in the world, like when you're looking to these cards.
And I'm like, oh gosh, history of Tarot in my life. I'm thinking about like, I think my half brother gave me a Tarot deck when I think I was like 13, and I remember doing a reading at my friend's house, and her grandmother walked in and screamed, "Witch!" She was like really freaked out. I think she was like deeply Catholic and just started screaming, "Witch!" And I like ran out of the house, and I was like running down the street, and they lived in like the suburbs, kind of like outside of North Philly. And then I remember somebody calling me a skater chink as I was like running, like trying to find the subway. And I was like, oh, it's interesting, this is like intersection of like, you know, the outsider.
That's really far out. Like all in one experience.
Totally. I think, yeah, there's a relationship. So, I mean, I guess, yeah, like I've said, you know, I try to look to a lot of different resources within, you know, like what my process is. And I don't know. The Tarot is like whether you believe in it or not, or how much like you know about it. I think it is cool because it's kind of a chance to meditate on something. And it also, there is a belief that there's a belief in chance, and that there is something within the images that can speak to us, I guess.
Well, how does that transfer into, and it goes for the both of you, y'all's work is highly orchestrated. Like, it's very meticulously put together. It doesn't seem like it has that much of an element of chance to it, but I could be wrong. Tell me if I'm wrong.
I would say that's pretty accurate, because I think both Dylan and I are like extreme feelers for sure, and one would think that if something's so rooted in like feelings, then it's like just about that. But I know for like my process as well as yours, like gets like thought about over like months, you know, like we like obsess over a certain thing or a set of things. That, yeah, might be rooted in how we feel about it initially, but then that gets refined and put through a very meticulous process, I would say. So, yeah, it's, like, very, very considered. But also allowing space for a chance and allowing enough room within the work and within the process for it to tell us what it needs, because at a certain point, like, we're no longer the I guess, like, you know, one pulling the strings. Like, the work eventually lets us know what it needs.
Yeah, I think it speaks to that element of, like, when you acknowledge that you're not completely in control, and also just, like, questioning, I don't know, that kind of control or mastery.
How would that control or mastery relate to what you guys were talking about with absence and presence, like,
of the body specifically?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so that reminds me, so the card said this, that it represents, one of the things it represents is wholeness, and I immediately got, like, a little bit irked by that, and that I've just been thinking a lot lately about that wholeness doesn't necessarily have to be, like, wellness, and to, like, acknowledge that, like, maybe we're not whole, whether through, like I was saying before, like, the entanglement of love, but just also thinking about, like, trauma and this idea of, like, okay, like, get into your body, get grounded, and that kind of, like, concept. And sometimes, like, I really struggle with that a lot, where I'm like, I'm not in my body, I'm not grounded, like, I'm not really always sure how to do that. It's scary, it's hard. And just, yeah, thinking that there's, like, a kind of power in that, too, just to be, like, you know, in, like, a harm reduction way, that it's, like, oh, maybe I'm not in my body, but, like, while we're out here, let's remember that we can fly.
Do you think that it's, like, more difficult, you know, for those of us in bodies who, like, you know, queers, women, people of color, differently abled, poor, like, have experienced maybe difficulty being so rooted in body because the body, our bodies are so charged and loaded? Like, do you think that it's the sort of, like, struggle to remain grounded is rooted in maybe, like, wanting to escape these skins?
Yeah, I think wanting to escape, also being, like, pushed out of the body. Right, I mean, it's, like, part of, like, having this consciousness outside of the body in relationship to trauma is, like, a form of the body protecting itself, which is really powerful, right? So there's part, like, I want to acknowledge, like, there's this whole ability that, like, my body, my psyche has to be, like, okay, like, maybe you're not ready for this, like, we're gonna, like, take you somewhere. And it's, you know, there's this kind of travel that's possible that is also, like, born of violence, but it's also, like, okay, this is, like, maybe a road that I'm on. And then also acknowledging that the concept of, like, the human man singular as we know it is constructed, and that is constructed by, like, this white supremacist cis patriarchy, that we're even considering kind of, like, the singular whole body in that way, you know, and that there's, like, so many other modes of being. So, yeah, I'm always kind of, like, struggling with this thing of wholeness, and also being like, I do want to get into my body. What's going on there? So I think, yeah, like, a lot of my work is kind of, like, trying to, like, you know, be like, okay, like, how can we get in the body? And also, how do we acknowledge, like, all of the different ways that we kind of move around it. But I think, yeah, so that is something in both of our work, this struggle around how do you show up in that body.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of something, I can't remember the name, it's some crazy name, but, like, when people pass out at the sight of blood or something, or, like, there's, like, a very specific name for when that happens. It's basically the body being like, you know what, like, I'm good on, like, being around for this, you know, like, can you deal with this, actually, you know, but it's, like, a protective kind of just, like, this is a little bit too much, like, to process on all levels. So, like, we're going to, like, shut the mind and eyes down. Not the mind, but, like, maybe the eyes and, like, full presence. We're going to shut that down for a second and then let the sort of, like, biological processes of, like, bleeding or, like, whatever needs to happen. The body pumps itself full of adrenaline. Like, whatever it does on a sort of, like, cellular, biological level. People faint so that, like, they can kind of have, like, a break from all of that. And then, like, it reminds me of also, like, people with, like, DID, dissociative identity disorder, when there's, like, a triggering event that, like, shows up, like, someone else, like, appears within, like, the, like, them to, like, deal with, like, certain, to process certain traumas, you know, like, the person or the personality best equipped to deal with, like, this triggering situation will appear while, like, the main, you know, captain of the body sort of, like, falls back a little bit. And so I think, like, in terms of, like, you know, again, like, all of us who sort of, like, maybe deal with, like, triggering events on a daily basis as it pertains to our bodies, like, we kind of have to, you know, perform and present different versions of ourselves depending on the context. And I think one of the beautiful parts of our relationship, I think, or why I feel so connected to you is that, like, we can kind of, like, in some ways, like, pass that off between each other, even if that's, like, a dinner. It's just kind of like, wait, that crazy shit happened to you? Like, she said what? And then I'm like, yeah, Dylan. And then we went to this bar, and it was, like, totally crazy. And it was a queer bar, but, like, you know, like, this white man said something weird about, like, black shit. And it's, like, there's all of these, like, very complex levels of, like, how we move through this space. And I think it's, yeah, like, instead of having, like, a United States of Terror moment where I'm, like, different people in the same body, I can just have, like, you. It's hard, like, I think people forget that, though, that it's, like, just leaving the front door is a little bit harder for some of us than it is for others. It's like going out into the world every day is tougher for some.
How do you feel like you deal with that in performance? Like a demand to, like, be a live body?
I think that's actually probably why I am interested in moving away from the performances that, or the types of performances that have sort of, like, gotten a lot of traction over the years, you know, these really aggressive, oftentimes violent works. I have come, you know, to figure out are in direct response to the sort of, like, the violence that, like, is, you know, aimed at my body. I was just sort of, like, flipping it and being like we were saying earlier, if this isn't a solo act, then, like, why can't I process it with all of you? Like, if you're gonna throw this shit at me, then, like, why can't I throw it back? And if, like, we're feeling this really, like, gross, like, intense thing together, like, let's figure out how to get out of it together. But working in those channels is, like, really exhausting, and oftentimes it's at the benefit of, like, the aggressor and at my detriment, you know? Like, I'm out here, like, maybe, like, quote-unquote, teaching a lesson to somebody or, like, trying to, like, start a conversation about very difficult things that I feel and live daily. But it's, again, oftentimes at the service of, like, them and at my, like, total, like, breaking apart. And so I think now the performances are now the work in thinking about, like, body and presence. And I want to offer that space up to other people because right now I really want to focus on, like, healing and repair, and, like, offering spaces of, like, generative, I don't know, yielding, like, beautiful fruit, you know?
When you're presenting or representing, like you're just saying it with the more violent performance work that you do, it's like the problematics of representing something so that somebody can see it and recognize it is often, like, just a violence in and of itself. Even if you're, you know, I don't know, there's something about it, like, it has to do the thing so that someone can see it and recognize it, and then it's like, well, fuck, that's just doing the thing. I mean, you know, that slippage between presentation and representation is, is like this fine problematic that I don't even know where
it's
it goes.
Such
but
a fine line. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this made me think about that I've been interested in this thing of your work in the past, where like in a lot of these intense situations that you present, that there are moments where people interject, like the audience like mm-hmm. steps in, and that I've been interested in like how that's developed, that it feels like, you know, you're doing this something, some kind of endurance-based piece.
The
jump rope piece, and then at Elizabeth Foundation for the Arts, climbing the stairs mm-hmm. for 12 hours?
I think like just over 9 hours.
And then people started, like, so in the fence mechanisms, like, you know, people like came and like took care of your body, and then in the Elizabeth Foundation piece, people started walking the stairs with you
mm-hmm.
and like bring you water, and that there was this, it started to feel like you were creating kind of like a question almost for the audience, like how much are you
right.
willing to see
mm-hmm.
without like feeling like you're kind of like complicit, like that there's like something that you could do. And that was interesting to me about the human resources piece, that I don't know, it was almost like that like love was something that like you had internalized in the piece, where you were like, actually, like I am going to declare
and you can find it on Facebook. So